It's Thursday, April 16th, 2015, and you're listening to Last Time on Video Games, the show about retro video games and sometimes some other stuff. You're listening to episode 101, Reverse Stockholm Syndrome. Runtime for this episode is 1 hour and 3 minutes. Hello, and welcome to Last Time on Video Games, the podcast that remembered how to count. I'm Jeremy.
I just reached my second transformation. I'm Tyler.
1, 2, 4. Okay, we're good. My name is Zach.
And there's Ghost Ed in the corner.
But he's so spooky.
Is that the one that we should be mourning there on the floor next to us, Tyler?
No, that's my work laptop.
Oh.
Your dead laptop is in the coffin?
Yeah, I actually think it's in the laptop case that I put it in last week, so.
So now we just have to shoot it out of the Enterprise? Into the sun?
While we get somebody who knows how to play bagpipes playing?
You know, I can't, in a, like, isolated starship like that, I would think that you would want to reclaim your resources from the bodies. Why not just, like, atomize them and then put them back into the synthesizer?
Because you don't
need
them?
Because that's cannibalism?
So everything is cannibalism by this logic, though, right?
Also, did the original...
You were breathing Hitler's ass.
Did the original Enterprise have a matter creator?
A synthesizer? Yeah, I think so.
I feel like it didn't, but what do I know?
I know it's on next gen.
Yeah, it's certainly on next gen with their fancy smanchy holodecks in there.
And hot Earl Grey tea.
Well, in case people were wondering, we have a new laptop that we have to record on because Tyler's faithful trusty Rusty died.
It did. It was sad.
Amazing.
Laptop! Your fans were way too loud. Okay, yeah, I'm done.
Okay,
thank you.
Okay, Captain Dead Laptop, what have you been playing?
Unsurprisingly, I've been playing a lot of Smash recently, so I've gotten to the point where I'm, like, winning almost every single match I play online. I'm like, I've got to find some better people to play with. Turns out, thanks to Reddit, there is actually a site called Anther's Ladder, which is apparently how people who play Smash in tournaments and stuff actually, like, play when they're not playing in tournaments. So everything up until the current generation, you actually just play on the Dolphin over the internet.
On the Dolphin
emulator is what I meant to say, over the internet. And it basically has an automated matchmaking system. And they added 3DS and Wii U to it, so you can have a match made for you and you just exchange friend codes really quick and go do that. So I've been playing a fair number of ranked matches, and I'm like number 700 out of 900 right now, so.
So slowly climbing that ladder, making sure you're not afraid of heights, making sure you got something to balance yourself against on the way up.
I'm on, like, there are 140 pages, I'm on, like, page 120 now, so. But I was, like, watching the chat, and some guy's like, you think you're, just because you're on page 3, you're hot. Although the current top of the ladder for the Wii U version, they segregate the Wii U and 3DS since you can't actually
cross-compete.
Yeah. The guy at the top of the Wii U ladder has 144 wins and 0 losses. I watched one of his matches, and it's like watching some sort of blur. He means Pikachu, of course. So, anyway.
So he's indestructible, untouchable?
It was ridiculous.
Take Ike, hit him once, watch him lose.
You have to hit him first, that's the problem. It's so hard to hit him. And it's amazing how fast this game is, even without wave dashing or L canceling. Anyway, so, yeah, Smash, I'm officially ranked.
Yay!
I might actually, like, go and play in a tournament sometime soon, because I feel like I've gotten pretty decent at it.
I'll tell you if any random tournaments appear. Like, I've seen a surprising number of flyers for them. Part of that is being a teacher. But, like, even in the wild, I will occasionally encounter flyers for Super Smash Bros. Tournaments.
A wild Smash tournament flyer appeared.
It's like some Yu-Gi-Oh! Stuff.
Hold L to run away.
Anything else, Tyler?
Nothing in particular. Import some Payday.
Zach, what have you been importing and playing?
Well, they released the Dead or Alive 5 version on the computer. I've been playing a bunch of that.
You imported it from Consolevania.
Yes, I did. It was a rough road. It's Dead or Alive. There's not a lot to speak on it. I mean, I played a bunch of it. I still enjoy the game. It's more convenient than having to load my Xbox up all the time.
People are upset because people who are doing Dead or Alive tournaments want to ban certain skins because they're too sexy.
I
didn't know about that.
Isn't that the point of, like, half the Konoichi battle style anyway, is to distract them with your sexiness?
I mean...
I feel like that should be a valid DOA strat. So, well, I would like to punch her, but her boobs are jiggling.
They probably have it turned on normal, not DOA.
I love how one of the settings for that is DOA.
And it's not the one it starts on.
Double DOA. That would be pretty good, Jack.
That would be fantastic. Yeah, I'm a little salty over the fact that they don't have online play enabled, because not that I'd take advantage of it. I'm not that good at fighting games, but it's weird that it's not enabled. So I'm playing that in League, and I'm still not ranked because I'm 4-1 and haven't bothered to continue.
Don't you need, like, so far one more win?
No, I need to play 5 more ranked games to be placed.
Okay, that's kind of a lot.
Not really, considering I could play like 5 games in a night if I wanted to.
Yeah, consider how voracious League of Legends players are.
Fair enough. Oh, I played Minecraft recently with a ridiculous pile of mods. That's the end of that story. It was fun. I learned a lot of stuff about mods that I've never played with before.
Was one of them the cool story bro mod?
It was not. It was the cool cast bro mod.
Anything else, Zach?
Basically just those two.
I've been playing a lot of The Assignment. More Fixture Breaks. This is surprisingly difficult than I would like.
It's not supposed to be.
Surprisingly difficult or?
Surprisingly difficult.
Not terribly fun either. And then more Dragon Ball Xenoverse. I actually played some with Tyler.
That was funny to watch.
I forgot about that. Oh,
pretty
that
pathetic,
game.
But funny to watch.
I almost won once.
You did win once.
Did yeah. I?
You won with Gohan.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Kid Gohan and his amazing headbutts of Interrupt.
Beat Jeremy's created character.
My mighty shades of death were insufficient.
Your shades of death, Goku's jacket, and Piccolo's shoes.
And my pants.
You have my pants.
Oh, and Gohan's gloves. They're really wristbands, but they're called gloves.
Okay. They go in the glove slot, so...
Speaking of that, have you seen the design for the new Frieza form for the new movie?
I haven't. I've been trying not to pay a whole lot of attention to it, so...
Yeah, I was super excited because Akira Toriyama is a great character designer, and then he just made Frieza a shiny Pokemon.
His next form is just gold.
Gold, of course.
A wild
Frieza! Frieza, use razor leaf!
A wild Frieza has appeared. Oh my god, it's a shiny, I have to catch it.
I don't even need the Mega Evolve to defeat you, Frieza.
I'm picturing, like, the golden Frieza shows up and Goku throws a Pokeball at it. Thunk.
Wild Frieza used Aurora Beam.
And also, Krillin has joined the police and is on, like, a motor scooter in a police uniform.
Is he bald?
Yes.
Okay, so he doesn't have
his
hair.
He has a mustache.
Oh man. Like, I want it to be like a Magnum P.I. mustache.
It kind of is. It's a way better character design than Shiny Frieza.
How did he become gold? He just trained for a couple weeks and was like, okay, I'm gold now.
Can of paint.
Yeah, I haven't seen the movie yet. It's actually, the dubbed version is releasing in theaters here before it hits Japan, they've announced. I think I'm going to see it. I actually liked Battle of the Gods quite a bit.
I have a new form. Click a click a click a click a click. Is that a can of spray paint? Yes. Click click.
Is Battle of the Gods the one with Beerus?
Yeah.
Okay, and Super Saiyan God?
Yeah. It was surprisingly okay, so I'm gonna Super see Saiyan if Resurrection God of F is any good.
Super Saiyan God Goku versus Superman.
I mean, actually, Super Saiyan God Goku can breathe in space, and my contention has always been that they would destroy the world and Superman would win because he doesn't need oxygen.
That's how we actually won in the death battle, so...
But now Super Saiyan God Goku does not need oxygen. Also, you can't sense his ki unless you're a god.
Huh, wait, what?
God ki can only be sensed by other gods.
Clearly. What is he the god of?
Super
Saiyans?
Saiyan. Super Saiyan god. Beerus is the god of destruction. And they're
and
like
an adorable cat.
Which is apparently like a position, because Beerus' boss is like, hey, Goku, do you want to be the next god of destruction? It's like, nah, I like people too much.
I'm not super keen on destroying things. Wait, who's the boss of the god of destruction?
Whis.
Oh, he's his boss? I thought he was, like, his assistant.
Yes, yeah, so that's what he, like, plays assistant, but he's actually his boss. And apparently in the interim between the movies, he's been training Goku and Vegeta.
For no better reason than he's bored?
Yeah. His Beerus has been sleeping.
He had to take a catnap after all that delicious pudding he couldn't eat.
That's actually in the movie. It doesn't go exactly like in the game, but it's Boo eats all the pudding. And he's like, Boo pudding, you no get pudding. And Garrus is like, that's it, destroy the earth.
If I can't have that pudding, no one can.
And Vegeta's like, don't petty. Hit my Bulma.
Really?
Yes, that's a line.
Also, silly dance.
And then Goku makes fun of it later. He's like, wait, you weren't there for... You asshole. You were just sitting there watching while we fought him, weren't you? No. And then you just swooped in like the goddamn hero again. No.
Well, to be fair, that's all Goku has ever done.
Yeah.
You guys ever watch bad fanfiction theater?
Not a lot, but the one Masako X did for Dragon Ball where he got...
It's actually Masako X's show.
Yeah, so. I know. But the one he did for Dragon Ball where he got little Kuribo to come back and voice Frieza and Land of Bator, I mean, Vegeta was so good.
That's all the Dragon Ball Z fanfiction that they do. They have various members of Team Four Star do the voices. So it's pretty awesome. Especially hearing the grumpy Vegeta voice going, yeah. No, we are not fight.
Yeah. Or like little Karibo's like vaguely British Frieza being a good guy is also great. So yeah, we'll link that in the show notes. But speaking of stuff by the great, late, still alive Akira Toriyama.
Still working.
More that he's come out of semi-retirement.
Kind of like Shigeru Miyamoto, never really got to retire, so...
Shigeru Miyamoto retired, and they're like, what are you people doing? You're running my company in the ground. Give me that wheel back. Akira was, like, not doing anything for 10 years. He was just living off those sweet Dragon Ball GT checks.
Wait, what do you mean there's a check for GT? No one liked it.
I'm pretty sure he's still making gajillions on Dragon Ball Z royalties.
I presume that One Piece merchandise started selling, and... He had to come out of retirement and do stuff again to re-overtake it. Or he just wanted to write manga again.
People who create stuff all their lives, I think, would be really bored with retirement.
Yeah, I'd buy that.
But speaking of Akira Toriyama creating stuff, our assignment this week is...
Shiny?
He's got better character designs than Shiny Frieza. Considered one of the best games of all time by some people, Chrono Trigger, which is the brainchild of Akira Toriyama, the guy who made Final Fantasy... and the guy who made Dragon Warrior, teaming up for great justice.
All right, well, I am fully prepared to be disappointed and fight you guys on every point, because that's how the show goes.
They called their dream team Square Enix, because there was people from Square and people from Enix. It was before Square bought Enix. Anyway.
Yeah, and Akira Toriyama was there, too. Be like, Akira! Toriyama! I sing my own theme music, because if you try to stop me, I'll throw money at you. Akira! Toriyama! Wait,
so I'll stop him! I'll just sit there and try and stop him all the time and throw money at me.
Can you just imagine some celebrity walking around with, like, a boombox playing just, like, incredibly tacky music as they walk around?
I'd do it.
That would be
announcing
great.
Announcing their own presence. Oh, man, Hercule. Just...
I'm pretty sure some One Piece characters have done that, although boomboxes aren't really a thing in One Piece, so maybe not.
Although, I mean, things not being a thing in One Piece hasn't stopped them from existing before.
One Piece is pretty consistent with its technology. It just has weird slug-based walkie-talkies and security monitors.
Lasers.
Lasers come from a devil fruit.
Cola-powered engines.
Yeah.
I don't want to drink that brand.
It's cola just... brand cola.
Just saying.
He also Nuka keeps it in a fridge in his stomach in case he runs out.
Wait, how... Like, he doesn't have a pocket dimension, right?
No, he just... He is a cyborg.
Oh,
and therefore,
okay.
He built his stomach with a fridge for cola.
I was thinking, like, a kitchen-sized refrigerator. I'm like...
It's more like a mini fridge.
Okay, that makes more sense. It's like a kegerator for
yes.
The boat.
Anyway, yeah, we're not talking about One Piece this week, as much as I would love to. When Oda, I can't think of his last name, makes a sweet RPG with the... guys who founded BioWare
and some other guy.
The writer of
That's not gonna
Mass
happen.
Effect.
You know why?
Because we live in an imperfect world.
No, because BioWare is currently partnered up or owned by EA who
but
hates
the people
fun.
Who founded BioWare are no longer BioWare employees.
Oh.
Yeah, they started their own company and I forget what it's called. Crazy Kill Games.
I don't know. When I figure out what it's called, I'll probably be buying stuff from them when they release stuff.
I was going to say...
I don't think they've released anything yet.
It's called... I'll put that in the link.
So anyway, Chrono Trigger is a successor to the Final Fantasy series. It was actually going to be a Secret of Mana sequel until they decided
It looks
Secret of Mana
something.
Was bad.
You know, the level design really looks like Secret of Mana, now that I think about it. I can see where that came from.
Yeah, but this is easier to navigate.
Oh, yeah.
So Chrono Trigger is a game in the Final Fantasy vein, except for it has a much smaller overworld map that it makes up for by having time travel mechanics. So you get to see what it looked like in 65 million BC when it's all one continent.
Which I actually find a lot more interesting than just having a giant overworld map.
I get to see the changes that happen to the world.
I could take or leave it, especially since a lot of the eras don't have much change.
Oh, especially between like 600 and 1000. They're like identical.
Yeah, pretty much.
Think that's the point, kind of, between those two. And then like 65 million is almost irrecognizable until you realize tectonic plates. And the future just sucks.
The future just sucks.
So you play as Chrono, a silent protagonist.
With red hair!
Whose objectives are to have a sweet date at the fair. So
it didn't even start out of that. It was to go to the fair and maybe hang out with his friend.
Yeah, that was it. Because the goal was go to the fair and talk to your friend Luca.
So here's some spending money, kid.
He gets date kidnapped by the princess who is using a fake name.
And he's like, okay, I guess I'm cool with that. So
wouldn't you?
Oh, yeah. I'd be all over that. So
So then you're an asshole at the fair because you're an RPG protagonist. You steal some guy's lunch. You try to sell her pendant, which you pick up before checking on her after you meet cute.
I didn't actually try and sell it.
You fight a giant pink cat-shaped robot.
Neither do I, but the game considers you as trying to sell it unless you explicitly go to Melchior and be like, no, I don't want to sell it. It's weird.
Melchior?
Yeah, he's at the fair.
Oh, I don't think I saw him.
Yeah, he's totally there. He offers to sell you weapons. And he's like, oh, by the way, would you like to sell that pendant you just found? Oh, wait, never mind. You should keep that.
Oh, I think I did go back and buy weapons from him.
You don't rescue some girl's cat, which is on the other side of the fair. What other things do you? Is that it?
You can drink some soda.
We played the DS version, which changed all the soda back to beer.
Okay. I had the DS version, but opted not to play it.
So. I don't think I did that one. I just stole the guy's lunch, didn't save the cat. And,
also, you can be impatient when Marl is picking out candy.
Yeah, and that's counted as a strike against you.
I don't remember that one. I think I was
It's right before you go to see Luca. She's like, wait, I want some sweet candy.
Anyway, well, after you...
I didn't think it let me move.
Yeah, that's... No,
it won't,
try.
But if you try to move, she'll be like, Chrono, quit being a bad day.
Random guy I just met to get away from the castle for a few hours. Hey. Anyway, after all that, you go see your amazing inventor friend's time machine.
Oh, it's a teleporter.
It's not supposed to be a time machine.
Well, no, it reacts with the pendant you didn't steal and sends the princess into the past.
Which you then have to go find.
Yeah. Where she apparently so resembles her great-great-great-great-great-great-grandmother that they mistake her for her.
Yeah, so then you go back
and deletes herself from time. And
yeah, apparently grandfather paradoxes work on a delay, so it is kind of consistent in that way. Because she does not immediately destroy herself.
By being there?
Yeah.
That happens later after you go talk to her.
Yeah, you go find her, and she's like, hey, Chrono, they treat me like the queen here, tee-hee-hee-hee.
Kapoof.
Yeah, oh no, it feels so painful. This is a really bleak scene. I am no longer exist.
Then your inventor friend comes back and is like, aha, I knew she was the princess. Look at this little, like, cutscene animation. Yeah.
Allow me to explain the grandfather paradox to you, so that you know basic time travel tropes, in case you don't.
Now, we need to go
to the mid-90s. They may not have. So
this was in the dark time, where there was no Doctor Who, so who knows? Although, presumably, they'd seen the Trunks saga. But Trunks Saga works on alternate universe theories, so.
Yep. Anyway.
You team up with a frog, you save her.
You fight some sort of...
Well, rather, you save her great-great-grandmother.
And then by extension, save her.
You go to the future at some point, find out that a giant alien space bug is threatening to destroy the planet at all, so you
already
get a robot.
Did.
Yeah, in the future, he already has. In 1999, you find out the apocalypse happens, and Marl is like, time travel? We should time travel to save the universe. Also, my dad is a jerk, and I don't want to hang out with him. So I'd much rather go on a sweet time travel adventure with my new kidnapped boyfriend, who is mute and therefore cannot protest our relationship.
Well, okay, to be fair, you did miss the part in there where you are indeed arrested, put in jail, despite the fact that you're being charged for something that people are being explicitly told didn't happen by the princess who's standing right next to you.
She clearly just has Stockholm Syndrome, exactly. Not the other way around.
Well, that and, you know,
poor Chrono.
Apparently you decided to bring your kidnapped victim back Actually, you know, given how much she talked, I probably brought her back too.
I regret this decision. Please, take
I kidnapped her,
back. Her.
Take her back. I don't want her anymore.
What, you want reverse ransom? Okay.
Here, take
let
gold.
Let me go fight some monsters. Gold, and you'll take her back.
I do really like it that in the present day there are no monsters in the forest in front of the castle, but 400 years ago there were monsters there, and one of the kings decided that was a problem. Although it's kind of like having alligators in your moat. So
and you don't want random demons to infiltrate as your chancellor.
That is true. That's a problem.
And threaten to kill the random dude that shows up at your doorstep.
So we've talked about a bit about the story. We haven't talked about the gameplay, though, which is RPG fair, but with a fairly standard twist. It's an active battle system, which I actively don't like.
I actually kind of like it.
I passively like it.
I wish you could just pause whenever someone's meter fills up and then, like, have an option to keep going if you wanted to. Wait, yep. I
if
like
you're targeting
you can,
a technique, you can set it to pause.
Yeah, but I wish it would just pause and let me go to attack or down to item or tech before.
So you don't have to be, like, super on those buttons?
Yeah. It really bothers me.
For whatever reason, I don't have a problem with it.
I'm not the only person with this problem, but it's not very common. Most people prefer the active to just pure time-based.
I tend to set it to wait.
And it has some cool... Well, I do too, but it only waits if you're, like, in a technique or targeting someone with an attack or looking at items. And if I hit items and decide, oh, hey, no, I actually want to use a tech. I don't like it when the enemy attacks me when I hit B out of items and then going up to tech.
Fair enough.
I see his point. It just doesn't bother me.
One of the things this also does, although Earthbound did it earlier, but your enemies aren't random encounters like a lot of Final Fantasy games. They're, like, just on the map.
You can see them, avoid them.
And you don't go to a random battle screen, you fight them, like, on the map.
That's actually really cool.
But I wanted to keep talking about the merits of the active time battle system, which is that if someone's meter fills up, you can just let them sit and use them if they're a healer when someone gets hurt. Or this game has a cool system where your spells can combo with other characters. So you can, like, have Chrono has lightning and Alia, the cat lady, has a chomp attack. So you have Thunder Chomp, where Chrono electrifies her and she chomps people.
Or Luca can set Chrono's sword on fire.
Yeah, that's my favorite.
Which you would think would be a problem.
There's
It's hot!
There's another one where a frog will stab his sword into someone and Chrono calls down a lightning strike and uses a sword as a conducting rod. There are a lot of really inventive dual attacks that I'm thinking about.
I like the fire and ice combination from Marl and Luca.
Yeah, the Ice 2 Fire 2 one is pretty good. It looks cool. There's also, like, Luminaire Heal, where you, like, zap everyone with healing energy, which is odd.
Or, like, Heal Spin, where it's just a heal spell and a sword spin move. So
you spin
on your allies and heal them all.
I do wish that you could reposition your team.
Yeah, you could actively move them somewhere. Yeah,
but
you
can't. A few attacks have range, or, like, Luca has a flamethrower attack that attacks enemies in a line, but you can't control where she's positioned.
That I wish you could do.
That's something I don't think we explicitly stated, is we said when you have a battle on the map, where everyone is on the screen when combat happens affects what attacks you can hit with AoE, or what attacks will hit with AoE. So, and enemies will, like, kind of meander around the map.
Also, because it doesn't have random battles, it's pretty good at throwing new and inventive enemies. Even at the end of the game, they're inventing enemies with new weaknesses to take advantage of. For example, in the mid-game, there were these guys with wooden shields that you have to attack with fire attacks to
do
the guys I was thinking
damage.
Of was there's a... They have wooden hammers. They don't actually have shields.
I think those were the guys I was thinking of, actually.
They function the same way. Like, you hit them with fire, they'll drop it, and then you can actually kill them.
But, I mean, to be fair, a lot of them are standard RPG tropes. Like, this one can only be hurt by magic, or this one can only be hurt by physical attack.
You hurt this one, and it eats this one and heals itself.
I like that.
Yeah, they're good at coming up with inventive stuff, and the enemies feel fresh until they end, and that's really cool, because usually in combat becomes a chore. It's a little hard to grind in this game, just because some enemies respawn, but not all of them.
And you're constantly zoning, and if you're doing that, you're constantly zoning. You're not just patrolling 6 square feet of tall grass.
You constantly have to go to a new screen and then go back to another. Yeah.
An arena of some kind would be cool to fight at, but...
Huh. I'm actually kind of surprised one doesn't exist in this game, especially given that that's kind of a thing in Final Fantasy games.
It does seem like something that would be up this game's alley.
Like in one of the End of Time Arena or something?
Well, they added that to the DS version, but you Pokemon battle there.
What?
You can raise Pokemon.
Oh yeah, I forgot about that!
Win items with them. It's not a very good system, and they added it onto the DS remake, so we won't talk too much about it. But it's there. So yeah, the combat system is pretty good. Towards the end, a few of the bosses have strategies that you have to run into.
One of them I'm thinking of specifically is in the future. There's like the one boss with two bits, and you have to destroy the bits first, or I forget exactly, and it keeps resurrecting them.
Yeah.
That there, actually becomes common.
That was one that was in the future when you first go there. One of the first boss in the future. Like, you could destroy his bits, and that's how he did damage before you could actually really start damaging the main part of it.
This game does rely a lot on, like, earlier Final Fantasy games had it, but this game has a lot of it where bosses have multiple pieces that you can attack.
Which is cool. It gives you choices in the boss battle that aren't, hope you have his elemental weakness. There is some strategy to him. The only
face tank him unto death.
The only problem I have with it is a lot of times the strategy, you just need to play it two or three times to discover. Like the Tyrannosaurus boss just has fire attacks. So if you just equip fire resist armor, he's a lot easier.
I'll keep that in mind.
He also has a countdown timer until he fires. So you could just save your healy character until right after he fires, and then heal everyone, and then you're fine that way, too.
He attacks everybody, though, and so it can be difficult.
It's much better to soak the damage.
But... Or there's this one really hard boss in a side quest that only does fire attacks. He has, like, five little parts, and only one of them is real, and you have to attack the real part to do damage. And
that's
all the
side quest?
Yeah. That's to get the, not the rainbow shell, but the sunstone.
Oh.
For Luca's most powerful weapon.
Yeah.
And also Kronos, but you have to do two quests for Kronos.
You also have to bring Chrono back to life. And...
Well, you can beat the game without it reasonably, but that's not really a side quest.
Yeah, I was going to say, do you have to bring him back to life? Can't you just beat the game without him?
Yeah, yeah. It's an ending. There are multiple endings to this game. And spoilers, if you do it without it, all of the party members go to save Chrono. Like, Marl, you should just hang out here. We'll go save Chrono. And then Chrono appears, and they make out.
Because clearly, I guess they would have fixed the time stream in such a manner that whatever caused him to die didn't happen somehow.
One of the things I did like about this game's it's tangentially related to combat here, is that everybody gains experience, even if they're not actually in your party.
It's only 75% of the experience, but it's still a really good feature.
It's better than none, which is what a lot of games at this time had. If they didn't participate in combat, they got in even later games, because Final Fantasy X does this too.
Yeah, but 10 has the cool thing where you can switch out your party members in battle. So it just becomes a efficiency puzzle of getting everybody in every fight.
Yeah, but still, if they don't participate, they don't gain experience. And also, no Agarus does that too, which drives me nuts, because you have a party of 900 people in that game.
The biggest drawback to Chrono Trigger is your techniques and spells are not linked to your level.
Yep.
And you don't gain points towards earning new techniques if you don't fight.
That said, no, but later the health in the game, there are definitely things that drop 8 tech points and are really easy to kill. So
yeah, and it definitely lets you change between guys if you want to without too much penalty. So I like it a lot. It's not a free lunch.
No, but it's much better than not having it. It's a feature I think should be in every RPG that has multiple party members that you can switch out.
That is true. I'm kind of surprised later games didn't.
A lot of them do.
That is true.
I think most of the BioWare RPGs have some of that.
Yeah, all BioWare RPGs actually do have that.
Okay.
The ones that have actual levels for party members. Well, Jade Empire doesn't actually have them.
Those are the ones I was thinking of, so never mind.
There are some things I don't like about this game, despite all the praise. Although one more bit of praise is the music for this game is...
It's really good.
Seriously really good. I found this original soundtrack and have just been listening to it lately.
The level design is pretty good.
I don't think it's anything special, but in a lot of ways, like Mario design, they didn't do anything wrong, so you don't notice how good it is.
I mean, I rocked on Magus' theme song a lot when I was, 14 and playing this game.
And Frogs is great. Frogs Kronos is really good.
Well, Frogs has, that awesome, almost a tin flute in it. And
I wish they turned it into an anime. I really do.
It probably would have been, especially with the DS remake and the cutscenes, you could see how it could have been an anime.
I just finished watching one.
You tend to just, settle on a party, which is true of most games, but it's one of the reasons I don't really like... games with a wide variety of characters, all of which are cool, is you don't really get to see them all unless you play through multiple times.
All of them are cool. Robo, really?
Robo's still a cool robot from the future.
I know.
I mean, you have that one side quest where you make him plant trees for 400 years
and then go get him
in the present.
What?
So if you talk to anyone in the present around, the southern continent, they talk about how the forest there used to be great, but...
Now there's, a desert there instead.
You can fix that by doing a side quest where you kill a bunch of desert monsters, and then Robo stays for 400 years planting trees.
And then
on the mini-map, as a robot tractor in 600 AD for the rest of the game. And then you just go to 1000 again and You're like, hey, okay, Robo, let's go hang out some more.
And he's like all rusted and stuff, and Luca's
like, man, I had time to think about lots of philosophy while you guys were gone.
For 400 years.
And you're like, that's nice, it's been 20 minutes.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's like, for you, he literally says, yeah, for you guys, it's been like 5 minutes. I've been here 400 years. It's been so long.
How'd you like it? Well, it was nice until you guys showed up.
And then he and Luca have a bonding moment where she like de-rusts him. She sprays some rust all over.
Then she like randomly falls into like a time portal to prevent her mother from losing use of her legs.
Or dying? I thought she died.
No, she loses use of her legs.
Okay.
It's not really well signposted that that's what's going on. I wish she was in a wheelchair and not just like sitting down all the time. Because it just looks like she's sewing or something.
Although, did wheelchairs exist then? They don't really...
Well, did robots... The
Inventor family.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, yeah, good point. They probably could have come up with something.
Yeah, they made a teleporter. You'd think they'd be able to come up with a wheelchair.
Butt pogo sticks.
I don't know. We can't. She can't move around real well. I don't know. Maybe if we put wheels on a chair.
Well, they have that giant fighting robot. Why not just give that a remote control and a seat?
Exactly. This is doable.
I got it. But back to the point, though. Like, all the characters are cool, but you can only use three.
At a time.
Yeah. And the game occasionally, usually right when you get a character, forces you to use them for a little while. But I much prefer, like, Final Fantasy VI, where the party's always being split and doing different things.
So you have to make use of them?
And not only do you have to, because they're, like, forced into the party, it's easier to give them story and development. There are fewer characters in this game than Final Fantasy VI, so they have more time to focus on them. And their personalities come through pretty well, but they never really develop.
I almost wish they just had a smaller cast.
But it's already a small cast. It's like six, right?
It's like eight.
Chrono, who has no development because he's silent. The thing is, he's the main character, so you want to...
Project.
Same reason
you
leave that Nintendo has always left Link... silent. Yeah. He's the projection, he's the lens character, he's your character, he does whatever you want to say.
But in a story-based game like this where you don't have dialogue options, I think it would have actually been better to make
Chrono
him a character.
Chrono doesn't really have any choices anyway, so he could have had lines. And
I agree with you. I'm not saying you're wrong. He apparently has enough lines to introduce himself because everybody knows what his name is.
Oh, Chrono, that's a... weird
either,
name.
Either that or he's wandering around with a name tag.
So then you probably want a healer, and so that's two of your party members already. And
yep,
so it's just
Chrono
a third,
and Marl.
Like, flex guy or...
you're going to want a damage healer, so that puts Luca there. All right.
Or Magus when you get him later. Because Magus is like Luca, but he knows all the elements, and his physical attack is almost as good as Chrono's. His downside is he doesn't have any dual attacks.
Because it's like, you people suck. I'm just going to cast dark matter on everything.
Black hole! The game is confusing a little bit. It's pretty good about giving you hints and telling you where to go. But there's one part in particular that it kind of hides where you're supposed to be going.
It's basically right after you get started into here.
It's probably like the second act of the game.
Well, I was going to say that when it gets to the point where you actually get to be able to go to multiple time periods, it doesn't really tell you where you need to go. It just kind of drops you in and says good luck.
Turns out you need to rescue one of your party members from his own depressive funk.
You can always talk to the Guru of Time, and he gives you pretty good hints. In particular, the development team talked a lot about how most of their beta testing was people not knowing where to go, and the developers like being like, it's easy. Oh, wait, no, it's not. We know because we programmed it, and trying to figure out how to hint at it. I think they do a really good job, except for at this specific point. The thing is, in a story-based game, you're really there to advance the story, and when you don't know how to do that, it's pretty frustrating.
It drags it to a halt.
Yeah, like...
because the game goes at a really brisk pace, I think, for story. It's a little weird that, like, the end of the game is, like, now you can do all the side quests or go kill the boss. So, like, eight side quests end up happening in a row if you want to do them all. But you do at least have control over that.
Well, that's where I got stuck, is right when it starts getting confusing. So...
and I got stuck there, too.
I had to look up a walkthrough for it the first time I played
mine
this,
was...
so.
Also, more because I got sidetracked than the game, than I got frustrated with the game.
That happened to me a little bit too, because I quit playing the game at that point last time I played, and that's the furthest I'd gotten because I just couldn't figure it out. And I think I was playing it at my grandparents without internet.
Oh man, no internet.
Yeah, well that's why I had Chrono Trigger, but I can figure out where to go.
That's. I feel like Toma's side quest is probably my favorite.
Who?
You haven't met him yet. You will. He's cool. Actually, you probably met him once. He's in the. If you go to the inn when you first arrive in 600, like, very first arrive there, there's, like, a guy who walks in if you stand around for long enough.
The mayor's like, hey, you're going to find the rainbow shell. I gave you this money, man. I hope you found that. It's just kind of like a little cut event. That's there's a little dialogue over here.
But later you can like go visit his grave. Like you work together with him and then you can go and visit his grave in the future, which is kind of neat. So
not for him.
I mean, not for him, but it's neat
you
for
sprinkle his alcohol over his grave and his ghost comes and drinks it with you. And it's like, yeah, one last chance to drink with my buds. Thanks, guys.
Wait, how are you not dead?
No, he does not seem concerned about that.
You know, when you're a ghost, you got other priorities. Logic is not one of them.
My other real critique of this game is hard to make. The story isn't that good.
I mean, I feel like we level that a lot of games that have good stories. Is there really not that good of stories for, like, by, like, novel standards?
The thing is, you get to experience this one and, like, go with it, and so that helps it a lot. And it is a, like, it's got twists, it's got foreshadowing. You can figure out things that are going on a little bit before it tells you, and that's rewarding. But, like, it's a plot story. It would be a fine story for a movie, honestly, but it would be like a dumb action movie that critics are like, yeah, not bad, you know. It's better than Transformers 4, but it's not art. But because it's all a plot-based story, there's very little character development. Like, the main character sacrifices himself for his friends, and it doesn't feel like development because he doesn't get any lines about it. And May just gets some character development, but it kind of all happens before he joins the party.
Like, he's probably the most interesting single character in
the game. Frog is pretty interesting, too.
That is
true. Well, I think that's just, that's a failing of just, they're getting used to developing stories and stuff at this time period.
Yeah.
Because you look at, like, later games, specifically BioWare games, they tend to have the BioWare guy in the, there's always one dude, and if you've ever played a BioWare game, you know what I'm talking about, because he's in every single one of them. But, like, every character exists. No, Garrus, actually, I'm trying to think of who it is in Mass Effect, but it's like Karth in Knights of the Old Republic, Atten in Knights of the Old Republic 2,
Alistair. Yeah, he's kind of sarcastic.
Oh, that guy. Okay.
Yeah, the sarcastic, sometimes whiny, usually professional. Oh, it's Caden in Mass Effect. I always let him die, so I always forget his name.
He's not more boring than Ashley, is my contention. but actually, I think bringing up Mass Effect is a good idea, because they're actually really similar, right? They're both games that make you sort of go to their plot events. Mass Effect, you have a little more control over what order you visit the plot events, but just a little. Chrono Trigger is a bit more linear, and therefore...
Yeah, in Mass Effect, you go to whichever one has Liara on it first, so you can finish getting your party together, and then do the rest of the plot events.
Chrono Trigger kind of needs to be more linear, so that there aren't weird time travel problems.
I would have really liked to see them introduce weird time travel problems, though.
If it was deliberate and you had to deal with them, that would be cool. But if it's just like, we messed up writing this part, so there's a paradox, that would be less cruel. And they went for a tighter thing. But they're both really, the story is more about building the world.
That is true.
Which would be cool if your characters felt like they had more impact.
Yeah, I feel like.
As characters.
And like, it's cool at the end of this game. I did feel like I had saved the world. So it's not like a terrible story. It's just like, if you remove the story from the video game, it's all plot. And it's, I mean, then you
there's
go
not
here,
a whole lot
and
of
then
character
you went
exposition.
Here.
They don't really, like, the characters have personalities, but you don't learn anything.
Marl has a thing where, like, she reconciles with her father, which is really clear in the side quest. But even then, it's like, at the beginning, they're fighting for reasons you don't really understand.
She's a rebellious teenager, clearly.
Yeah, yeah, but you don't, they tell you that, they don't show you that.
Exactly.
Here's the problem with video game stories in general. These people are together for a long period of time. Odds are good this type of travel takes a while. You're running across a continent.
And they never talk.
Literally. And they don't talk. If they talked to one another, that's one thing that I think going backwards, we've kind of gotten better about, because like in the BioWare Dragon Age 2 and 3 games, depending on who's in your party, they'll talk to one another as you're running through town. As you're doing something, your party members are talking to each other.
We've gotten better at doing exposition without having to be an exposition dump.
Yeah, they don't.
We figured out how to convey that better.
They've got rid of the plot wagon. More so.
So even though this is a game that's lauded for its characters and talked about being character-driven, by the standards of a story, I don't really think it is.
No, I agree with you.
It's
I'm not
a
saying,
character-driven game.
I'm not
story,
saying the story is,
matter.
You know, the worst thing I've ever seen.
It's not, but also, what's the moral of the story? And you're not done with it, Zach, but like...
Don't destroy the world?
Yeah,
but
don't
like,
come.
You're not even really responsible for that a space parasite is.
Be the hero? I mean...
I want to be the guy?
Have your girlfriend, who sort of forced herself into the position, make you be a hero so that some guy 999 years in the future won't die?
Uh-huh, pretty much.
That's immoral.
I mean, there isn't really a moral. Although, I mean, I feel
get
like
a girlfriend by any means necessary.
And like, what are the what are the themes even? Like, I feel like there are themes, but I think a lot of that is the music, because the music is really good at including leitmotifs and having songs feel like they're calling back to other things.
I mean, the only thing I can think of is Nature of a Hero, but that's kind of.
I mean, and like, there is a game theory about how this is a retelling of the Bible, which is pretty interesting, but I think mostly coincidence.
I agree with you. I watched that one.
But. I feel like there are themes in the game, but I don't feel like they're recurring themes. Like, there's a, like you pointed out, the Mystics are very obviously like a Muslim analog. And
but I don't think they're obviously that. I just think you can read that into them.
Well, especially going back to Zeal, I think there's, I mean, there's like oppression is bad.
Yeah.
Is kind of a theme, but like that even, only happens once.
Like, Zach didn't get to the part with Shala, but even she's like a focal character, but like her conflict is her mom is doing some, telling her to do something she knows is wrong, and she does it anyway, even though she like overtly wants to stop her mother.
But then she'd be disowned and like cast out with all the other people who aren't living on the magical sky.
Yeah, but
palace.
She like sympathizes with them and is like, you know, she's like the saint because she is cool with the people who aren't living in the magical sky palace.
I think a lot of people would argue the answer is yes, but do stories need to have themes or morals?
No, but they need to have something. I'm like, they help, right? And like, what is good about this story? It's really that the world is cool, and Akira Toriyama drew some cool stuff.
Yeah. It's mostly that, yeah, the environment into which you're thrown is kind of neat.
And it's cool to feel like you're saving the world, which this game does a good job of making you feel. This game is really good at establishing the stakes. Like, even before the game arguably really starts, that cutscene you were making fun of where Luca explains the grandfather paradox is actually really good, as silly and sort of basic as it is, and then you feel like you have stakes, and then the stakes rise with Chrono being sentenced to death, and then the stakes rise of we need to save the world, and then they sort of get pulled back and become personal, but that's good too. Like, you get Frog's story, and then you get Magus' story.
I think that's kind of the problem with saying that it in any ways is a character story, is they pull the stakes up so far of, well, okay, you're sentenced to death. Okay, you can stop there and get some story interaction with the characters you currently have, learn a bit more about them, why they're following you. Like, because Marl just kind of goes, rebellious teenager, I'm leaving.
Luca's your best
friend. Luca breaks in to bust you out. Yeah, she's your best friend, so she's following you anyway. Get some story character interaction or character
Robo comes with you because
there.
The future sucks.
But yeah, and then Robo comes with you because the future sucks. But then immediately after you're sentenced to death, it goes, okay, now the world is going to end. Okay, and now we're going to back off and give you some more character interaction with these other characters. Well, why can't we kind of...
Well, I mean, like, even the romance between Marl and Chrono,
it's pretty weak.
It's definitely there, but it's sort of told and not shown. The only time they really show it is when Marl, like, is trying to save Chrono from his death, and that's only really if she's in the party. And it's mostly the king going, oh, your mother told me one day you'd bring someone you love to the palace, and I should welcome them with open arms and not sentence them to death.
Oops.
I screwed that up.
But even then, like, they've only been around each other for, like, probably 2 days at that point.
Weeks,
yeah,
probably.
Like, traveling across the continent, I buy it, but, like, there's not enough there.
Well,
like,
they weren't even traveling that far across the continent.
You get a little bit...
Like, when you first interact with her, because you go back in time,
like you save her life. You save her existence.
Okay, that's fair.
You get a little bit more character interaction talking to all the people at the end of time between things.
But it's not like, again, that feels like a BioWare game where they added the camps and stuff and you get to talk to people. And that's cool. But again, it feels like the BioWare people are like, man, if only there was like conversations
exactly.
and stuff you could have there. That would be great. And they're right, it would be. But this game doesn't have it.
I'd actually like to see a retelling of this story with something like that. You'd probably have to change some major plot elements, but...
The story is good as far as just the plot progression goes. Like I said, as a like action movie, it would be okay. There aren't that many continuity errors. There are a few things it doesn't really tell you, and a few things you have to pay attention to figure out how they work. Like, how did Magus get from here to here, then to here, then to here? But like, it does make sense. When you realize, oh yeah, we all got sent to the future when this happened, so he must have too since he was there, and just he got sent to a different time, which doesn't really make any sense, but like, stories pull that all the time.
Yeah, well, stories will pull the random thing.
Zeal is really cool. I love the music.
Zeal is the last time period you haven't been to yet.
Oh, okay.
It's the Kingdom of Zeal. I think it's 12 million BC, or 12,000 BC, something like that.
It's in between the Middle Ages and the prehistoric place sometime.
Oh, okay.
It's cool. I love the music there. The society
and,
is
And again,
neat.
The design is really cool. All the time periods look really cool and unique.
Oh, and they've got, like, golems, basically, doing a bunch of work for them. That's I forgot about that. That's pretty neat.
And they are running on solar power. Like, even the themes there are really cool. It's got the coolest characters. That's where the story sort of changes gears, and that's like the mid-story twist, I guess, is everything that goes on in Zeal, and it's really cool, but...
There's not a lot of character development, moral of the story.
Yeah. It sort of fits the archetype of the hero's journey, but only the beginning. Cronus starts as an everyman with a katana for some reason, but
a knowledge of how to use it. I was asking that, like, why does he have a sword? Where is he pulling that from? Although, I mean, they are still living in the Middle Ages, technically. They're just, like, on the cusp of Industrial Revolution.
Yeah, but he's not a soldier. Why is he carrying a sword?
For protection, there are monsters everywhere.
That is true, and it's valid, but it's never gotten over. Because Cronus is a silent protagonist, what would he say?
Or he's a psychopath and just carries a sword. Or maybe he's just a nerdy teenage boy and he carries a sword because he thinks it's cool and his mom
wants
it.
Maybe he bought it at the last fair.
Exactly. He bought it at the Ren Fair.
At the Ren Fair in Ren Fair. You remember that.
Although I'm being a little harsh on this game. It's really, really good.
It's one of the better JRPGs in existence.
I had to ask these guys why we waited so long.
Because we needed the time we needed to give it the time it deserved.
Did I tell you when I bought this game?
Yeah, you told me that the guy was like, people say this game is good.
Why do people keep coming in and asking about it? Why?
Maybe you should play it, random guy who works at a game store. Come
on. I mean, it's only on just about every top 10 list of video games.
I'm not sure. Well, it should have been on top 10 at one point. I think we've probably made 10 better games.
If you're talking about the most 10 influential games, though, like I said, okay. I feel like there's a real break. RPGs have to step it up after this game.
They really did.
Although I like Final Fantasy VI almost more. I think I need to play VI again to really be sure, but they're both really good.
They are both good. It's a hard decision.
And like Earthbound, like Chrono, Earthbound, and Final Fantasy VI are the great JRPGs to me.
And then there's VII, and...
I mean, VII's good.
It's really not.
Cloud killed Aerith.
Well, and the guy who wrote this, you did not write it. He was brought on to help write. He wrote all of the Zeal portions and a fair amount of the game, would go on to write Final Fantasy VII.
Ah.
And, like, Final Fantasy X is my favorite Final Fantasy, story-wise, and it's...
What
okay.
is the story of X? I got stuck in Blitzball.
It's actually really a lot the same story as this game. You get sent to a random time period, monster.
Except you don't exist.
Like I said, he's the star player for the Xanarcan Ace. She's a religious girl on a pilgrimage to defeat Godzilla.
Shenanigans ensue when she summons... Vafnir... Whatever the name of her first bird Aeon is.
The minister, who's actually an evil psychopathic necromancer, wants to marry her. Anyway, you can tell he's a good guy because he summons Cthulhu. So yeah, Chrono Trigger, really good game. I definitely recommend it. The DS version is probably the best, but you can find it on iOS, Android, your Wii Virtual Console, the PlayStation Store. If you can find Final Fantasy Chronicles for a decent price, that's a PlayStation game that has this and Final Fantasy VI.
That's a good combo. Just do that.
So speaking of good games, we have started ranking games, and we have quite a few to go. 38, actually.
In case you missed our last 5 episodes.
Yeah.
Go back and watch those. They are good.
Watch the waveforms. Watch that little ticker go up.
So we are, like I think I said last time, going to be ranking 3 games every episode. So we've gone from this great RPG with this fantastic story, innovative gameplay, fantastic art and design, down to Cruisin' Yusei.
Oh, man.
Oh, jeez. Quality drop.
I think the worst racing game we've played for this podcast.
We haven't People played that disagree. Many, actually.
We haven't, but I think this is the worst.
I think he's right. It's the first real racing game.
I think you shift gears. There are really ugly women in bikinis with signs.
The controlling.
If the graphics were better, they might be attractive. The graphics are boring. The environments are boring. The enemy cars are boring. You can sense a trend here, can't you? The handling is actually pretty terrible.
It's rubber bandy. I remember liking this game a lot, but I think it was the first racing game I ever played.
I think
played.
It was the fact that I remember playing in an arcade with a cabinet.
I mean, yeah, the
now,
gear
a wheel
shift
and a gear
helps.
Shift and a brake goes a long way, I think, to help it.
But. Well, because you get the feeling. It's still not a good game in the arcade. But
it feels better
because you're not seeing the terribleness so much because it's only a one-time thing. When you're sitting back and you're at your TV with your controller, it's like, this game really sucks.
It really feels half finished. Like, the AI is terrible. All
right, so we're going to start with F-Zero. I think F-Zero is better. I think F-Zero is prettier.
It's worse in every way.
Okay, so we're going to get into Mach Rider, which is kind of a racing game.
I feel like Mach Rider is more interesting.
Yeah,
at least Mach Rider. Yeah, Mach Rider had more going on. This is way too long of levels for each race.
I could play Mach Rider. This game is like almost impossible to control.
Okay, so let's...
I didn't think it was that bad, but it is pretty bad.
What do I want to drop down to? Ghosts and Goblins. Zach's a game Zach hates a lot, and it's fairly low on the list. It's kind of a random comparison, but it's...
I want to Mach Rider. I hate Ghosts and Goblins. I really, really do. But this game, there's like Ghosts and Goblins is really, really difficult. But that's kind of the point.
This is frustrating because it's bad.
Yeah, this is frustrating because of all the above reasons. It's bad. It's hard to look at. It's controls like...
There's not even a difficulty curve.
I've said before, I prefer a game that's way too hard to a game that's way too boring. And so for that reason, yeah, I think Ghosts and Goblins is better. But luckily, right under it, we have another boring game. We have Phantasy Star.
I think Phantasy Star is worse.
I think Phantasy Star is worse.
Allow me to defend Phantasy Star. In the same way that I will often say ActRaiser has ambition and should go above things, Phantasy Star has a whole lot more ambition than Cruisin' USA. It created this whole world that could be interesting.
Terrible 3D mazes.
Yeah, a talk command. I feel like Phantasy Star has way more interesting potential. I feel like if I was stuck in a straitjacket with a Sega Genesis controller
you
and
might
forced
play
to play
Phantasy Star.
I would start having fun way before.
So you developed Stockholm Syndrome is what you're saying.
Way faster than with Cruisin' USA, though.
You're much more likable an asshole than this other guy.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, that, I have to give him that. That's fair enough. Cruisin' USA really doesn't have that much going on in way of it. Because the tracks, like I said, we said, they're not interesting.
They all feel the same, even though
they feel the same. They have a slightly different color palette. You might have a tree every few miles.
The next game Zach has played is Prince of Persia.
I prefer Prince of Persia, honestly.
I prefer Cruisin' USA.
I'm really torn because, again, I feel like if I was locked in a room with them, I would develop Stockholm Syndrome for Prince of Persia first.
I started having fun with Prince of Persia because it's definitely a difficult, balls-hard, terrible game. But you start to learn how it thinks. You can eventually progress.
I just prefer the racing aspect of Cruisin' USA. Like, I could see me playing that again. I'm never going to touch Prince of Persia again.
I'm never going to touch either again. But for the same reasons that I said Ghosts and Goblins is better, I think I also have to say Prince of Persia is better. Again, it's too hard, but that would create interest before another race through San Francisco, guys. So Operation Wolf.
I like it better than Operation Wolf. It'll be hard to convince me otherwise. It's definitely better than Space Harrier.
Yeah,
so.
No, I want it right above Space Harrier, but I can't think of a convincing argument.
I can't think
for
of
Operation
a way to put
Wolf.
It beneath Operation Wolf.
Okay, then it will go between Prince of Persia and Operation Wolf.
Got some real quality here, guys.
Man, I was looking at our list, and we've got 62 games on it when I made today's episode. And, like, starting at 30, I'm like, oh, this is a terrible game. How are we not even halfway through the list and they're this bad?
What is 30?
What is a 30?
Strider.
Oh, God, how are we not? There is a significant quality drop between 29 and 30, I'm betting. What is 29?
Pokemon Snap, I think.
Blaster Master.
I like Blaster Master.
That's not bad.
I think 27 is Pokemon Snap.
Correct.
It's definitely in that area.
Pokemon Snap is 27. But next we have a weird shmup. It's got lots of charm, weird graphics, but not much else. Fantasy Zone.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about this game. It's way better than Space Harrier.
This is the one. Yes, it's way better than Space Harrier. This is the one where your ship has a nose and feet if you land.
And you can, like, buy... Get
oh, yeah, the game
power-ups.
That is horribly misnamed.
Yeah.
I was thinking this was, like, the castle thingy, where you could build or move blocks around.
Oh, I know which one you're talking about, but I can't remember what it's called.
I don't know.
It's like Solomon's Quest. Solomon's Key?
Solomon's Key, yeah.
Okay, whatever. That's not what we're talking about.
I don't consider that a building game. But yeah, Fantasy Zone, it's... got some interesting mechanics. The money getting and going to shops is interesting, but the way you beat levels is
not explained.
Not super intuitive.
Well, it's the kind of absurd that could only come out of Japan in the 90s. Like,
with somebody on acid?
I don't even think acid is necessary. I think this is just Japan. I mean, you got like a tree that shoots wooden teeth at you, and...
Your ship has feet.
Yeah, your ship has feet. You can just walk around.
So we're going to start at number 32, which is the lowest shoot 'em up on the list.
Life Force.
Life Force.
I think it's worse than Life Force.
don't know. I feel like Life Force is better executed, although this has...
Having a clear jaw, knowing how to beat the level is
I forgot I had so much trouble with that. That's a good point.
Yeah, like, Fantasy Zone is definitely bringing more innovation to the table, but I do think Life Force is much better executed.
Again, knowing how to beat the level.
Yeah, I didn't real like, it's a certain amount of points, I feel, was how you...
I don't know. I never got there.
I can't remember.
You needed to kill certain enemies, I think. I don't remember. It's definitely in the instructions. You definitely can look it up and figure it out. But it is not intuitive.
You know how you beat it in Life Force? Fly right until you run into him. Then kill him, and you've beaten the level.
You don't even have to fly right. Okay, you have to fly up and down.
Mach Rider is not really a shoot 'em up, but it's the next game on... Oh, Scat! Scat is below Life Force. I forgot that's a shoot 'em up.
Okay.
It's definitely... I gotta go with knowing how to beat the level.
It's definitely more innovative than Scat. All Scat's innovation is you can go up sometimes. But again, Scat seems a little better executed. It seems a little tighter.
And has Arnold.
It does have Arnold. Yeah. That's it. The power-ups in... It comes down to, do I think buying power-ups is more interesting than finding them? And
I'm not sure I do. The fact that they're expendable makes me not super cool about it.
Expendable? Yeah.
Consumable?
Consumable is the more normal word. I think worse than Scat is my gut.
I second this opinion.
Yeah, I third this opinion.
So Mach Rider is just a few down. It's not exactly a shoot 'em up, but it's...
I like this better than Mach Rider, if only on level of zaniness.
I don't know, I'm kind of equal. I forgot we played Mach Rider. I forgot what it was. I mean, that's how much of an opinion I have on that game.
Okay, I'm going to say better, because right up between them is Earthworm Jim. And there's two levels of absurd we can talk about. Earthworm Jim is a dumb platformer. I feel like innovation puts Fantasy Zone ahead of it for me. And again, bad level design of Earthworm Jim also makes it difficult to figure out what you're doing.
Level design.
So they have similar problems there.
I can play Fantasy Zone more easily. I mean, Earthworm Jim looks...
Well, at its core, Fantasy Zone is still just fly around and shoot stuff. Eventually it might hit the boss. Who knows? Earthworm Jim, you might spend 2 hours on a level and not know where you're going.
So Fantasy Zone...
And then fight a belching crane operator.
So Fantasy Zone below Scat, above Earthworm Jim. That's an interesting part on the...
Great accolades there.
Okay, so next a much, much better game. One we didn't super get into, but it's going to be hard to rate. I think we're going to rate it lower than it deserves just because we didn't get super into it. And it's a cool game, but I don't think one...
Well, what is it?
It's Street Fighter 2.
Ha.
You know,
it's not that good.
No, it's not.
Compared to other fighting games that came after it,
it set up so much for fighting games, and like at the time it was a game you could really compete at, and that does a lot to me. I get really into games like StarCraft and StarCraft II and League of Legends, where you can learn more and get better, and you can play more and get better, and there's always someone better than you. And this didn't have a ladder system because it wasn't online, but it has the depth for that.
I don't like 2D fighting games to begin with, so that... Hands up, that's fair. I prefer 3D, but...
This is a lot slower than the ones I like.
That too.
And a lot older.
I can play Marvel vs. Capcom 3. Bullet time.
One of the first competitive games that made it to home systems. So.
I really didn't like it. If I had to pick a fighting game from this era, I'd probably go for Mortal Kombat.
It's Primal so much Instinct. Better than Mortal Kombat. I've never played Primal Instinct.
It's pretty good.
I don't think I've ever even heard of Primal Instinct.
So, Vince, this is the first fighting game we're putting on the list. I'm going to compare it to the highest brawler we have, which is Streets of Rage at number 59. Oh, I forgot, Smash.
Smash isn't really a brawler, but yeah.
Wow.
So, Streets of
Rage. That's
I
the
think
highest
it's
rated
Street...
fighting game or brawler we have.
I don't like brawlers.
That's fair. That's fair. I just thought
there are a few good ones, but
I thought one
few
kind of
far between.
Tripped its way up the ladder a bit more.
No, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2 isn't legally available anymore.
Now, there's Battletoads.
I think Battletoads is, but Battletoads is super hard. So yeah, I think it's better than Streets of Rage by a lot.
Easily agree.
Probably.
With that.
So what do I want to jump up to?
I mean, do we have any competitive games on the list?
No, not really. Not to this level, I don't think.
Well, I don't
think
that
you can argue Super Metroid, but
we still
that's
really
way high and a pretty.
We still weren't at the point where multiplayer competition was a thing in gaming.
There was a little bit. There was the I can't remember what it was called, but Nintendo had that competition where they had that special cart that was Mario and
yeah, but it's like, all that's all single player stuff. That's not direct head to head competition.
No, but that's still competitive. Like
we
I
hadn't
think,
gotten to that yet. This game is kind of one
of
the early
first.
Points where you have direct player against player competition.
And it introduced like combo canceling, although wasn't that hyper?
That was a glitch.
Yeah, that was a mistake, but they kept it in and started and in further versions.
the ability to use combos in this game was a glitch.
It was a glitch. It was unintended. Like the fact that your super move canceled out of regular moves because they couldn't figure out a way to stop it. But that ended up being a big deal. Doom 2, I guess, is a competitive game. You could play it on LAN. Like, that might be the...
I have more fun with Doom 2.
I think Doom 2 is better.
I don't, but I'm clearly outnumbered. And there's a giant gap between the two. Now I have to find something between there. But I guess we have a ceiling for it. Okay, since we were talking about number 30 being such a great game, Strider. Do we think it's better than Strider? Because I do. The controls...
I agree.
It's slower, but the controls are way more precise. The characters are cool.
I don't really have an opinion between the two. I didn't like either one. I guess I'd have to go with this
one. Which one did you dislike less?
Probably Strider, because I like that high-paced type of thing.
I just felt it was too...
But I'm outnumbered here.
Okay, so now I have a 10-game window.
This is like binary search.
Oh, we do have a brawler higher than that. It's right here, X-Men Arcade.
Oh, okay.
I think this game's worse than X-Men Arcade.
I had more fun with X-Men Arcade, but I'm not sure if that's just due to its meme-worthiness.
I legitimately think it's just more fun.
X-Men Arcade, I've gotten all the fun out of it. I've bled it dry.
You feel like there might be more?
I know there's more in Street Fighter 2. I don't know if it's worth going to when I could play Street Fighter 4 or Marvel vs. Capcom 3 instead, but I know more is there.
Or Smash
Tyler?
4. Given that a large portion of the depth and complexity that this game had was accidental, I'm going to have to say it's probably a worse game than X-Men, although it was so influential.
Yeah, influential because of accidental combat mechanics.
Yeah, but then they made 3 more versions of it that were on purpose. So.
Yeah, and chimichangas were accidental, but I'm not going to knock them. They're amazing.
Cheese was probably accidental. Consider that. I think I'm going to have to argue for this above X-Men Arcade.
Zoning in, next up on the list is Vigilante 8. I like this more than Vigilante 8 as well. Again, it's a depth thing. Vigilante 8, you just kind of shoot stuff. It didn't feel like... I mean, it's cool.
You guys also didn't get the chargeable weapons in...
Until, like, the last battle.
Until I mentioned it. When somebody asked me how I had the ping pong gun.
Yeah, but how long did we spend with Final Fantasy 2? Not long at all. Final Fantasy 2, Street Fighter 2. How long did we spend with Street Fighter 2? Not long at all. I feel like there are similar arguments that can be made there.
I think Vigilante 8 is better put together.
I feel
the
like
mechanics in it are intended, not accidents.
I feel like it's more immediately fun, honestly. It's got a level of camp I certainly enjoy that even Leifong, is that his name in this?
I don't recall. All right, then. This will go above X-Men and below Vigilante 8. So that's our 3 for this week. Not stellar choices, but... Okay.
I realized.
Good conclusion.
I realized something relating to next week.
The next 3 should be a little better. Should run the gamut a little bit, too. Nothing terrible. So, speaking of next week, Zach, it's your turn to pick a video game.
Well, the reason I realized that something interesting about it is we ended up with a game right underneath Vigilante 8.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking, it's available on Steam, Crazy Taxi.
Okay. I'd rather play
Less
it
guns.
In the GTA 5 version. But...
I'm gonna take you for a ride.
You gotta
I'm
pick.
Gonna take...
Less guns.
You gotta choose
More
pick
crazy.
The best one. All right, next time on Last Time, get a cab, you two.
This has been a production of Last Time on Video Games. Copyright 2015. All the games, movies, and other media I mentioned in the show are copyright their respective owners, in case that wasn't obvious. Past episodes, articles, and other information can be found at www.lasttimeonvideogames.com. If you'd like to contact us, send an email to ltovg@lasttimeonvideogames.com. If you'd like to find us on Twitter, we are @ltovg. We can also be found on iTunes. If you wanted to help us out, we would really appreciate if you left us a 5-star review. No extra lives were lost in the recording of this podcast.